Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. The Soul of Business with Clarissa Montero on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Soul of Business on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. Joining me on the phone today, Amajit Kaur from Withers Carter Wong. We talk about fair retrenchment for both employer and employee. Amajit, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Clarissa.
Okay, let's get right into it and start with the concept of responsible retrenchment. From the point of view of employers, you know, they're looking at bottom lines, the survival of the company. How then do you balance that human cost to the individual versus the company's priorities? So I think this is a little bit of letter of the law versus spirit of the law.
Yes, Clarissa, I think you highlighted what lies at the heart of retrenchment, which is balancing the interests of a business, which is trying very hard to stay afloat. And at the same time, companies struggling to try to retain their workforce to the maximum extent possible because they recognize that their staff are breadwinners and have families to feed. So how do you strike the right balance? So as you said, responsible retrenchment is the way to go to minimize the human cost. And responsible retrenchment essentially means conducting it responsibly, treating the employees fairly and in a humane manner that keeps their dignity intact. So essentially, you would have read that the MOM strongly exhorts companies to resort to retrenchment as a very last measure after exploring all other cost-cutting measures, because retrenchments are final in nature, right? Mm-hmm. It means your employment has come to an end, as opposed to all other sort of flexible job sharing, reduced work weeks, etc., which keeps the money coming in. Now, another aspect of responsible retrenchment is ensuring that the decision on who to retrench is made based on objective criteria without discrimination. And of course, it comes down to providing employees with as much help as you can. So whether that's by way of giving them advance notice or more notice than you're required to give them under the contract, giving them more payout by way of retrenchment benefits, and even softer assistance, right? For example, helping them with updating their CVs, helping them with interview practice, helping put their name out there with other players in the industry. Essentially doing everything you can to make sure that you make this as painless as possible for the employees. Now, what is not acceptable, however, when we say what is not responsible retrenchment is where companies engage in sharp employment practices and try to shortchange the employees in the process. Now, one example of this is by disguising retrenchment as anything but what it is. So, for example, where a high-performing employee is told, sorry, there have been performance issues and we have to let you go. Or, sorry, but there's been some misconduct. And therefore, not only are we not paying you retrenchment, we're also not paying you notice pay. So this is how not to conduct a responsible retrenchment.
So what you're saying is when they say, oh, there was some conduct issues, these are trumped up excuses?
In certain cases, yes, Clarissa, we are seeing these pretextual misconduct cases coming up, where, you know, employers just suggest these things and don't actually have evidence. Now, the good thing is that if the employer does dismiss an employee on this basis and there is no actual evidence and they haven't conducted a proper due inquiry or investigation, then the employee can challenge it. But not all employees are so well-versed as to challenge such things.
Right, right. Okay. Now, there have been some retrenchment announcements that have been making the news in the last few months. So I'm going to assume that there has been some trends and some practices and some behaviours that have emerged as good industry behaviours. Can you highlight those to us?
Yes, Clarissa. I would say largely there are three strands to this. The first is having clear and transparent communication with staff and other stakeholders, for example, the ministry and the unions, in advance of such an exercise. And the second is doing as much as possible for the impacted employees. And as I said before, treating them fairly and with dignity. So this involves going beyond just complying at the bare minimum with local legislation and regulation and doing more. The companies that have done more have scored better in the media because it shows that they're exercising goodwill in looking after their employees and not just ticking boxes to ensure that they comply with the letter of the law. And the third strand is proper planning and having a clear strategy to ensure systematic management of this exercise. Now, SIA is a textbook example of a well-conducted retrenchment exercise. It's been recently in the news. They've had generous retrenchment payouts of 1 month's salary per year of service, capped at 25 months for those who work for 2 years or more. They've tried to help facilitate transition of staff to new jobs. And a very interesting way of informing employees was to have a one-to-one session with each of them to explain what was going on and to go through the retrenchment terms whilst having on hand representatives from the unions, counsellors, etc., to assist and provide support.
That's not necessarily required by MOM, the counsellors and what have you. So is that more a case of the companies trying to be responsible in their retrenchment exercise?
Yes, absolutely. So that's not required by the MOM. It's a sign of the company going above and beyond what it is required to do by the MOM. And we've seen quite a few examples of this in the media. So LinkedIn, for example, let go of quite a lot of people, including in Singapore, but they made use of their unique digital networking platform to try and link their employees with new jobs. And we saw Airbnb likewise set up a talent portal for prospective employers to browse the CVs of their ex-employees. So these are all signs of them going above and beyond, and I think that plays out very well in the media because you are showing that you value your employees even though you're having to let them go, and that will help them attract talent in the future when people are considering, do we like how these companies treat their people? Do we want to work for them?
Okay, we're speaking with Amajit Kaur from Withers Qatar Wong. In the back of most employees' minds, mine included, we're thinking at least 1 month for every year of employment is a standard retrenchment benefit. You brought it up with Singapore Airlines. That's what they gave, up to a maximum of 25 months. What don't we know that we should know about what our rights are, what benefits, what we should get?
Okay, so that's a common misconception that we should be entitled to at least 1 month for every year of service.
Right.
Because there's, in fact, no fixed sum to be paid out. Now, another point to make is that employees in Singapore, we don't have a statutory entitlement to retrenchment benefits, which is something else that we assume, but it's not actually true. So what happens is step one, do we have a retrenchment clause in our employment contract? The reality is this is not common in Singapore. Certain MNC contracts have those, or key executive C-suite types have those. But for the most of us, we don't have such clauses in our employment contract. In which case, we then need to look at, okay, so how is this to be negotiated between employer and employee? And when we get into that realm, employers are guided by the advisories released by the tripartite partners. The main one of which is the Tripartite Advisory on Managing Excess Manpower and Responsible Retrenchment, which is a mouthful. That was released in 2017.
I'm glad you said it.
And well, that's where your 1 month actually comes from, Clarissa, because that particular advisory provides prevailing norms of between 2 weeks to 1 month per year of service.
Right.
So 1 month is considered the higher end of the spectrum, which is why in positive retrenchment exercises, where employers can, afford it, you tend to see 1 month being paid out. That's also the sum that's usually agreed between unions and the employers.
Right. Okay. So it isn't something that we can assume we're going to get. It's something we hope we'll get.
We hope we'll get, and that has been eroded somewhat, Clarissa. So that takes me to my next point, which is the advisory name that I rattled off earlier, that was released in 2017. Mm-hmm. But an addendum was issued to that in May this year to take into account business difficulties arising out of COVID-19. Now, what the addendum does is it outlines three categories of companies and their financial standing. The first is employers in sound financial position who are expected to continue to pay out between 2 weeks to 1 month salary. The second category is employers whose businesses are adversely affected. And your guess is as good as mine as to what adversely affected means, because I think every business has to some extent or the other been adversely affected. Now, essentially for such businesses, the rate of payout is to be negotiated. That means it can go below 2 weeks to 1 month, but it must still take into account years of service. And the third category, which is for employers in severe financial difficulties and or on the brink of ceasing business, are allowed to negotiate a lump sum payout that departs from taking into account years of service. So the certainty that we had with the 2 weeks to 1 month has now been eroded by virtue of this addendum, which was necessary to account for the financial impact of COVID-19.
Right. And with that addendum and its wording, it could mean anything. It's quite nebulous, yes. Isn't it?
It's very nebulous. It's very ambiguous. So I think there is an urgent need for thresholds to be clarified, because I have clients coming to me and asking, what does adversely affected mean? And how bad does it have to be before I can say I'm in severe financial difficulty? So there is some need for clarification in this space. And I think there's an imminent update to this, to the original advisory, which DPM Heng announced in his ministerial statement in August. So I hope that they will take the chance to clarify these thresholds and other outstanding issues, including the definition of retrenchment.
Right. Okay. And this is, I assume, where MOM comes into it. Is enough being done to protect and support the individual? I understand the need to support companies, but what about the individual?
Okay, so the MOM generally exercises scrutiny over the companies and through that seeks to protect the individual. Now, the first manner in which the MOM comes into play in retrenchment exercises is through mandatory reporting requirements. So, for example, companies that employ 10 or more people who make 5 or more people redundant in a 6-month period are required to notify the MOM, and they have to furnish information on whether retrenchment benefits were paid and the quantum of the same. So this holds companies accountable because they're subject to MOM scrutiny. So that's the first category. Now, the question arises, what happens if the employer is doing everything possible to try and characterize the terminations as anything but retrenchments? In that case, how does the MOM come into play? Mm-hmm. Now, in such a case where companies are trying to sidestep this notification requirement, the MOM generally only comes into play when an affected employee complains, in which case they then undertake an investigation into the conduct of the retrenchment exercise. Now, this again requires the affected individuals to advocate for themselves. And in many, many cases, these are the rank and file staff who don't often feel bold enough and sometimes don't even know how to report. So that's an issue.
And is there any assistance for them? Is there somewhere they can go to report it collectively, perhaps?
So, I mean, they can, again, the key reporting centres would be the MOM, and there is the TAFAP, which is the Fair Employment Practices Body. But again, it requires them to take that positive step. And in certain cases, and I have clients who've done this, they have one person who is well-informed, who then takes the lead, and they follow. But that's not the case in every organization. But now the good thing here is that if it does come to the MOM's attention that there has been disguised retrenchments, the MOM has said that they will penalize the employers by curtailing work pass privileges, which are very precious in Singapore, and withdraw their JSS. And given that JSS is going to continue till March 2021, I think this will have some teeth, provided that it gets to the MOM's attention.
All right. We're speaking with Amajit Kaur from Withers, Carter and Wong. Now, with the current, with recent retrenchment exercises, what are you seeing? Is there contention? Are there people coming to you, for example, saying, I'm not happy with the way it was handled?
Yes. Okay, so so we see cases at both ends of the spectrum, right?
Right.
There are definitely retrenchment exercises that are being conducted fairly, responsibly, and the employees are being looked after. Those tend to be handled fairly amicably. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are those that are going very badly wrong, where, you know, which sort of tend to end up in our lap because it results in a dispute between the employer and the employee.
Sure.
Now, we are seeing a lot of examples of this, for example, as I suggested, where, you know, employees are being termed poor performers, where there is no such evidence in their performance, in their KPIs, in feedback received to date, and then out of the blue, they're being told they are poor performers. This tends to cause a deterioration in the relationship between the employer and employee and ends up in, you know, exchanges of letters between lawyers and the employers. Now, a good example in the past of one such exercise would be the Sabana Jurong exercise. And I don't know if you recall this, Clarissa. This was in 2017 when 54 people were let go on the basis of being poor performers.
Right.
And they were censured by ministry, which said it was unacceptable to do this. So we are sort of seeing smaller scale examples, not sort of 54 employers, but a couple, a handful. Mm-hmm. Another example of a contentious exercise in the media recently was Eagle Services Asia. where staff were given no notice of retrenchment and were told to pack their belongings and leave immediately. So these sorts of retrenchment exercises don't go down well, and then they lead to contention and disputes which follow.
From my understanding of what you said earlier with individual rights, there aren't actually that many for us. Moving forward, what should we be looking for in our employment contract? Should we now start thinking about or start insisting on some kind of a retrenchment clause in our new employment contracts?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We don't have statutory entitlements to this, so the contract is always king. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing better than actually negotiating a retrenchment clause in your employment contract. Now, as I said, this is not very common in Singapore. So when you receive your employment contract, take a look, check if there's a retrenchment clause in there. Now, my approach to negotiation is always, if you don't ask, you will not know, right? You will definitely not get.
Right.
There's no harm asking for a retrenchment clause to be put in, which should cover things like notice to be provided, so the period of notice, salary in lieu of notice, if that's something the employee is willing to consider. In addition to that, the quantum, if it can be agreed, would be very helpful. Certain C-suite contracts actually go as far as to provide for outplacement services of a certain quantum or even with a certain service provider. But the reality is, Clarissa, there is still a gross imbalance in bargaining power between employer and employee. So try as much as we may want. We may end up with what is just a very generic retrenchment clause, which says something along the lines of the employer is obliged to provide retrenchment benefits so long as it's consistent with prevailing legislation and regulations. So those sorts
of motherhood
clauses...
doesn't mean very much at all.
No, it doesn't. But it gives companies maximum flexibility, you see, because the truth is, from a company's perspective, these things are constantly changing. They're constantly in flux. So this gives them the wiggle room to adapt to different circumstances, for example, COVID-19, without pinning themselves to a specific scale of payout, for example. So I think we still got a long way to go, but as long as we as employees try to negotiate these clauses in, I think we can try and make them more common, and over time, we can have fairer retrenchment clauses.
Right.
Which we could then resort to without having to look at, you know, for example, the advisories, etc., because contract will always prevail.
It feels like we need a champion.
We do. We need many champions. It will take all of us advocating for ourselves and for our fellow employees to try and get somewhere.
Right. Unfortunately, we're out of time because I still have so many questions for you. But this has been very enlightening and I appreciate the time. We've been speaking with Amarjit Kaur from Withers Carter Wong on The Soul of Business. Amarjit, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Clarissa.
I'm Clarissa Montero for the Workday Afternoon. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.